There we go. Tiger fans, welcome back to another video. The 2025 draft was almost a week ago now, and we were lucky enough to welcome four new Tiger Cubs to the mix. And today, we're very lucky and very fortunate to be joined by the man who made it all happen, National Recruiting Manager Ry Geeshan. Welcome to the show. Thanks for jumping on to answer some fan questions.
No, no worries, Chris. Thanks for having me. And yeah, happy to jump on. I know how much the fans love the draft, and it's an exciting time of year, and I love how invested our fans are and what we're doing and who we're bringing in. So, yeah, happy to talk through it.
Before we get stuck into the draft side of things, I'd like to learn just a bit more about yourself. So can you tell us a bit more about your journey into this role and what other previous roles that you had that proved to be a really good stepping stone to land the position where you're in now?
Yeah, for sure. It's been a long journey when you look back on it. So I finished school. I went to Deakin University, did commerce sports management. Probably then I realised that I was keen to work in sport and particularly footy. Footy's in the blood. Obviously, Dad played and coached and worked in the game, and I grew up with my brothers playing and sort of played as much footy as I could growing up and all through to, I was about 26, 27. So post-uni, worked for the AFL, did some time in the AFL membership department, sort of answering phones and doing some grunt work, and then got a job at AFL Victoria working in sort of talent and game development, and then moved in more into the talent space, worked with the VFL and TAC Cup operations, and a little bit with the Vic Metro program under Anton Grabak, who was a really good person to work for, learned a lot off him. John Hook as well, who sort of famously was a footy manager at Hawthorn and recruiting manager through their sort of really successful era. And then I was about 26 and went for the job at the Northern Knights and got that. So became the talent manager there. And that was a great job for me. I spent 5 years there, worked with a lot of talented kids, but also managing staff, managing coaches, high performance, medical, probably where I learned a lot of my skills. Moved over to Melbourne Grammar as the director of footy, coached the first 18 at the school there, and then went for the job at Richmond when Will Thursfield left at the end of 2022, and was lucky enough to get the role here. So, yeah, it's been a while now. But I think they've all held me in good stead and had some really good dealings with recruiters through all those different roles, and felt like I had a good handle on the talent pathway and how it all worked. So, yeah, it was
such a vast range of sort of knowledge and workplaces. Was there one particular role that you felt you learnt the most from, and who were some of your mentors during your journey?
Yeah, I think the Northern Knights job, like spending 5 years there, you're sort of out in the region, training nights every night. We had sort of 70 boys in the 18s, 50 boys in the 16s. We ran the girls program as well. So just seeing sort of what made the kids tick, what made the kids successful, their habits, mentoring them, helping them, guiding them through, that held me in really good stead. I feel like that's an advantage I've got having worked with so many young athletes now, and it's probably similar at Melbourne Grammar. Like we had guys like Josh Ward, Campbell Chesser, Ned Long, Max Ramsden come over from basketball. So yeah, working with them was quality. In terms of mentors, so like I've been really lucky to work with a lot of different people over the journey. John Hook was one of my earlier ones. Obviously my dad, played AFL, coached AFL, grew up with him. We moved all around Australia. He coached at West Perth and Wodonga and all these different clubs, watching him go through his, his AFL role with the umpires. Just seeing how hardworking he was, but the way he worked with people. He's been, a huge part of my life as well and sort of my values. So, lucky to spend time. And then since I've been here, I think the fans know Blair Hartley, how quality he is, just picking his brain as much as possible and working closely with him. He's really upskilled me in the recruiting and list space as well.
It's a beautiful 1-2 combination we've got between Blair and yourself. We'll jump into the draft questions because the fans have sent through quite a few questions. I've culled a few of them back because it was quite extensive. It's one of those areas that's quite intriguing and interesting for supporters, I guess, from all clubs really, to try and work out a bit more about how it all happens at Clubland. But are you able to tell us a bit more about the ranking criteria used and what goes into building the ranking criteria when you're sort of putting your list together?
Yeah, so I guess our ratings rankings, the way that we do those has been built over time. So Blair and a little bit of Francis, back when they both started at Richmond, it's sort of evolved from there. So I don't want to give away too much because Blair will won't be too happy. It's like the Colonel with his herbs and spices. But it's sort of what we do is we continually sort of watch, evaluate the players throughout the course of the year, and all of our processes, whether that's interviews, you know, watching games live, the vision that we watch, the reporting, the GPS, all the medical information, everything goes into the formula at the end of the year, and it comes out with a number. And that's when we always refer to going away to the beach and locking in for 3 days. That's when we sort of get in and debate. And then the five of us, so myself, Blair, Ollie Grant, Sam Cousins, Francis Jackson, all give a rating. And then ultimately that spits out what our order is. So it sounds complex, but it's really not. We're just evaluating everything for each player and then giving him a rating on the back of that. And then we typically stay pretty true to that, but then things like list needs and last-minute information, where we think a player might get to, where a player might slide to. Obviously, that was really important last year with having the 7 picks in within the 28. You know, we knew that some guys would be there a little bit later. We knew that some guys we'd have to pounce on a little bit earlier if we wanted them. So, yeah, it's a combination of everything, and that sort of determines how we go about it.
And does the draft also, does the criteria change depending on where the club feels the list is at? Example, if we were contending for finals, does that change how you value or rank players versus if we're rebuilding and what's required to take the club forward?
Not really. I think in these roles, you've always got to have a lens to the future. So we're ultimately just trying to pick the best player that we think will be a long-term Richmond player. So like Taj Houghton's a really good example. Even if we're in the window, I feel like we would have still picked him. We see him being a really successful Richmond player over the next 10 to 12 years. So we felt like he was too good to pass up on at that stage of the draft. So no, not particularly based on where we're at. A little bit, you know, based on list needs in terms of we picked the three key forwards in last year's draft. We're probably less likely to pick one, but it's still really important for us to rate those players accordingly for us to look back on, or if a player slides to a certain part of the draft and they're just the best available talent. So we're really like our lens, and particularly the recruiting team in particular, really have a future lens, and we're picking for 2028, 2030, 2020, you know, 2032 with that in mind, which you speak about a lot.
And you mentioned the key forward, and then compared to someone like Taj Houghton, do the different player types, like a key forward versus inside or outside midfielder, do they have different or unique criteria that you would rank them against, given they would sort of play and perform differently?
Yeah, we do. So like a key forward, I think every club would have similar values in terms of competitiveness, ability to bring the ball to ground, high-numbered marking situations, so really important to compete and not get outmarked, work rate, and then just overall footy smarts, you know, leading patterns, all that sort of stuff, versus, say, it's an outside mid, running power, speed, you know, ability to use the ball on the outside. So we, you know, they have different rating points, but ultimately we still rate them on the same system, and we don't weight anything. It then becomes if two players are rated quite evenly, we make a decision come draft time as to who we'll select based on a little bit of list need.
Yeah, okay. Funny, the forward traits you just mentioned, I could just picture Jonty Fall fitting all of those quite easily. He is a competitive animal, and I think he's going to be a fan favourite for many years to come, as is Harry Armstrong. He's just as competitive.
Yeah, and that's it's funny, like you talk about sort of outside noise and where Fox Footy have a player ranked and where Cal Toomey have a player ranked, and it's not something we really look at too much. Like what we value in a key forward, Jonty pretty much is. So where he's spat out on our rankings, we're always going to pick him pretty early. So on the back of, you know, what we value in a key, which is compete, work rate, bring the ball to ground, contested marking, and then ability to fight, outnumber, bring teammates into the game, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, he typifies what we look for in a forward.
He does. He's going to be a ripper. Speaking of the draft boards, fans often imagine the draft boards are just a simple ranked list. And I'm guilty. I put up plenty of different mock drafts and trying to guess who's going to go where with no idea whatsoever. What's something about your ranking and your board and how it actually works that's often misunderstood?
I don't think too much is misunderstood. Probably what's added complexities is all these aligned players. So like this year it was up the top end. There's so many aligned players like Zeke Ewell and Dill Patterson, Harry Dean, Bo Adansall, So you just got to rate them. I think you can fall in the trap of not doing as much work on them. Whereas, like I've said publicly, we went over to Gold Coast, we met with Zeke, we met with Dill, we met with Bo. We put a lot of time into those boys as though they're on the open market. I think it's the only way to really do it, because then you get a sense of how strong the draft is. If you're looking to trade picks or trade back into the draft, future picks, you've got to get a really strong feel for the whole draft.
Yeah.
But it has made it a more complex job. And I think the ability just to trade in and out, you've got to rank the whole draft. I think if it was, you know, early 2000s before the pick swaps came in and you could trade picks live on the night, you could almost cut corners a little bit and just do work on certain parts of the draft. Whereas now, myself, Ollie, Sammy, in particular, have to be across all the players and have strong knowledge that if they slide through or a pick trade comes in, we've got to know them inside out. So that probably adds a bit of complexity to what we do.
Sliders and bolters are pretty much draft buzzwords that get used a lot by fans and media. And do those phrases exist at Clubland with the amount of work that you do and sort of the amount of resource and staffing that you've got going into this? Or are your list just pretty true and final? Is there not much that can waver from what the data presents you? There's not much that can waver from it.
No, not really. We don't really listen to outside noise too much. I think you can get spooked a little bit by what the media is saying about a player or, you know, where they fall on X, Y, Z person's ratings. But, like, we're really confident we've done so much work on the players. We're flying all around the country each week to watch them. We've sat in their homes. So, like, someone like Roby was fascinating because he genuinely did come from outside. So, when he popped up, first noticed him, Ollie Grant, who's our Vic recruiting manager, he sort of downloaded all of his local football and got to work. He's sitting there like live coding all the Roeville games. And we just made sure we had as much data and vision and information on him as we possibly could. And then with that comes a level of comfortability that we know the player well, despite somewhat limited access to the talent pathway. So you probably meet with those players a little bit more. You find out more about them. Whereas, Willem Dersma, for example, I met him at the AFL Academy Hub. I met him at the Vic Country Hub. He came into the club in March. We probably had five or six visits with him, whereas Sully, we genuinely didn't know about until round 11 when he popped up. So you've just got to get to work. And that's where Ollie, in Victoria, and Sammy with WASA, them being full-time just gives us access to someone pops up a little bit later, we can get to work. It's a little bit exciting in our recruiting team as well, someone fresh and new, and it spices up our recruiting meetings a bit.
Be a fly on the wall when they bring all the new information to the table. You mentioned the obviously the use of analytics and then the eye test as well by going to watch games. Has there ever been cases where the analytics and the eye test don't align, they point in different directions? And if so, what happens in those instances?
Yeah, it's probably like the testing. So the speed test is an interesting one because they do the 20-meter sprint. But just knowing the player's backstory, so like Leon Kickett, he's popped up. Sam Cousins sort of had a fair bit to do with him throughout the course of this year. He's a great kid. He'd never done any form of physical testing ever. So, for him to come in and run the 20-meter sprint, he'd never practiced it. He was foreign to the test. They do three tests. He got quicker with every single one. Watching him play, like, we know that he's quick. So whereas some kids have been in the talent pathway since they were 12 years old, they practice the testing with their local personal trainer. They know the techniques inside and out. So just, knowing and understanding the kid, a little bit with the GPS and positional type as well. Like Harry Armstrong is a really strong runner, but the density rule at the Coates League and the National Champs didn't really allow him to get up and back and run AFL patterns. So quite often he's stuck inside forward 50 when there's a stoppage, whereas you watch him play at AFL and he's up and back. And so his GPS probably didn't read as strong, but then knowing the way that they play and, the style of games. There's a lot of, in WA, a lot of the games are wet in the middle of this year, so those kids' GPS probably wasn't as strong. Their kicking efficiency wasn't as high. So nothing beats watching the players live. And I think if you've got a really good handle on the player and the conditions they've played in, who they are, that, solidifies what you see. And as you said, the data's just, one point, but you've got to sort of trust your eye and your knowledge as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, all those different factors. Yeah, I mean, even just as simple as the weather in WA playing a part in sort of skewing numbers a different way, something that I guess not many fans may even consider.
Yeah, it was wet. It was wet season over in WA, which is rare. I think you go over there from Melbourne hoping to get some sun in the middle of winter. And we had some monsoonal stuff, so hopefully next year it's a bit warmer.
And how and when do you look back and measure the success of a draft crop, and how much do those learnings play a part in what you do in the future?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We always talk about, and Blair's strong on this, like giving it 5 years.
Okay.
So you look at last year's crop, like there's examples of guys that have come out and had really strong seasons. There's guys who haven't been able to get on the park, not just for us, but all throughout the course of the draft. There's guys that went to successful teams where it might be a little bit easier to play a role, whereas there's guys that have had to go and play a little bit more of a lone hand, or playing forward in a team where they didn't have as many inside 50s. So you probably just got to settle and let it wait and not get too spooked. But at the same time, like, you're constantly evaluating what you're doing and what you did. So we'll do some initial sort of reviews on how we went about it, our processes, how we evaluated the pool, how we acted on draft night, where we were really flexible. But then you watch them unfold, and you've really got to wait a few years, I think, before you can assess what you saw and what you missed. But then you look at someone like Murphy Reid, who came out and kicked 4 goals in the space of 5 minutes in round one, and you think, did we make the right call? Could we have picked him? But we're really happy with the guys we picked in last year's draft. We're really strong on that. But you're not going to be able to pick everyone in every draft, and players like that we put a lot of time into. We would have picked if it got out to a certain pick, but I think you can't lose sleep over people that you missed out on. You just got to move forward and make sure you're doing all the work on the next year's pool. And you can't get access to everyone as much as we tried last year.
No, I think the 2024 crop looks an absolute ripper. I think we'll be pleasantly happy with what happens in years to come. This year's draft, though, there seemed to be a clear value placed on speed. Did you already anticipate that players like Grill and Cumming may have been available in our range, which allowed you to draft the way you did in 2024?
Probably not the players as such. Like, Sam Grill was on our radar because we watched the Coates League the year prior. He played with like Jagger Smith, Finn O'Sullivan, Jasper, Tom Gross. We watched that Chargers team really closely, and he clearly has speed, agility, movement. We saw him as someone that was potentially a target, but at the same time, it's more positional type. Like, Blair and I walked away from last year's draft thinking it would be really nice to add some speed, and probably mid-season draft, which we did a lot of work on but didn't pick anyone. That's the type of player we're out looking for, like someone with speed and repeat. Tom McCarthy would have been nice, but West Coast had first access. That type of player. And then, so as the year unfolded, they were the players that we were watching particularly closely. So it wasn't so much about like, hey, we're going to go out and pick Sam Cumming and Sam Grill, but it was like, it would be nice to add some outside run and speed and some real power to our mix.
Just to compliment the other guys drafted. Did receiving the North Melbourne additional first round pick, how does that change things for you in what you do and who you're looking for? Does it make any difference at all? Is it just, we've got another top end selection to utilize?
It made watching the North games a little bit more fun this year.
It did. It did.
we've got strong relationships at North. So Will Firstfield obviously worked for us, and we're all good mates with him, but we were cheering against him a little bit. It was nice to have two top-end picks. Like, it meant that we could really focus in on going to watch the players that we thought were in that mix. And the philosophy, predominantly like for myself and Blair, we'd go and just try and watch those players as much as possible. So Will Dersmer was clearly one, Grill was one, Duff Tyler, all these guys at the start of the year that were rated near the top, we put significant work into early, knowing that we'd have a couple of opportunities to pick early. And it meant that as the year unfolded, we were really comfortable that we knew those guys well. Having two early picks, it meant that we could focus really heavily on that part of the draft early in the year, and then continue to watch the back end as well.
And we've heard a bit about, I suppose, Uze in the preseason so far, I've been talking about playing and training at sort of breakneck speed, I guess you can call it. how much of a consideration or emphasis does the game plan that's being taught or that's going to be taught in the future sort of dictate what type of player types? Or are you kind of left to just to pick the best available, or does Uze have a really big input in his direction and what types he wants as well?
Yeah, Uze is great. Like, we obviously work really closely together, and Blair, along with Tim, heads up the entire footy department and sort of really heavily connected to what we're doing. I think that snippet from the media has maybe been taken out of context a little bit. Like, I think Uze was referring to, you know, if you're going to fail at training, fail at top speed. So,
yeah,
you know, try and hit your kicks at top speed, hit the ground balls at top speed, you know, challenge yourself at game-like intensity. I think the fans maybe see that as we're going to go all out breaknet. So I don't think it'll change too much from what we've done previously, but it was more around the philosophy of, you know, train at AFL standard intensity and,
okay,
you know, put yourself under pressure with your fundamentals. So that being said, like, we were really keen to pick some speed in this year's draft. So, but that's not, we were never really going to go away from best available, but if those guys that had those attributes were near the top of our order, then we'd shuffle them up a little bit. So, yeah, it was a clear need for us, and we feel like we've been able to walk away with four guys that really have that.
And speaking of the four that we walked away with, we'll just touch on them quickly. Sam Cumming looks to be a great fit for the midfield. Were there any particular metrics of his that stood out for you that just couldn't be ignored?
Oh, his toughness. Yeah, and it's a hard one to measure, toughness, but that's where you trust your eye. Like, and just learning about his journey. He played senior footy at 14.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy. I remember myself at 14, and I can't imagine myself doing that. he's genuinely tough. Like, the way he plays his footy, he's uncompromising. And adding in with sort of some power and some speed, yeah, we felt like that was just too hard to pass up. And his ability to proven against men, his sample senior footy was really strong. We feel like he's a really honest footballer in that, you know, he values offense just as much as defense. He'll get in, he'll tackle, you know, he'll run defensively really hard, but then he'll challenge your opposition with ball in hand and take the game on, try and get out the front of stoppage. And I love it when he goes forward, Sammy, and, you know, attacks the aerial ball and ground ball in the forward 50. We just feel like he's that sort of chaos forward as well, who, you know, similar to what guys like Dangerfield do. They get into the forward half and just their attack on the ball puts the opposition under a little bit of threat. So he was able to do that at Sample 18s. Ollie Grant went over to SA and Sammy played exclusively forward one game. They were looking after him a bit, and he played out of the cage and, you know, showed some real attributes forward as well. So, yeah, they're probably the main things for him. Just his toughness, his competitiveness, his uncompromising nature. We think that'll hold him in really good stead.
It's a good little 1-2 combo. I just keep picturing him and Sammy Lawler either rotating from half forward to midfield and being equally as dangerous for opponents up forward. But I really sort of was drawn to his senior football as well. Does a player or a young kid coming through playing senior football tick any additional boxes that maybe put them ahead of anybody else at all, just the fact they've been able to sort of compete against men at a good level?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and sample footy's really strong. Like, we spent a lot of time over there watching the sample and his ability to hold his own in that side. And then, you know, the game where he had 21 and kicked three, I've referenced it a few times, but he got injured the very next week, about 5 minutes into the game, where we went over to watch him. But we feel like he would have contributed really strongly to that sample senior side as the last couple of games unfolded. So projecting there, he could have really sort of finished off strong in that side. So, definitely holds him in good stead. And I love what, you know, Sample and Waffle do. And I think Victoria's starting to do this a little bit more, where once the champs are over and you feel like you've seen the players do everything they can at Coates League, to go and play in the VFL is really important. Like, Dursman did that. Duff played a game and kicked three. You know, players are able to go and showcase what they could do. We did that with Harvey Langford last year. We brought him in. We brought Finn into our VFL. We brought Jagger into our VFL. I'm really strong on players going back and trying to play some VFL footy, and I know the Sample do it and the Waffle do it as well. I think it sets the kids up for success, but it also enables us to get a look at them in that sort of in that environment as well. So the more they can do that in the back end, I think that gives the recruiters confidence that they can go and do it against men.
I think so too. I think it's a wonderful idea to have him come through to the VFL program. Speaking of which, Sam Grill obviously played some VFL football for us as well and was super impressive, it must be said, in those VFL games. As someone you tracked for a while, where do you see him playing his best football? Obviously played a bit of halfback in the 18s, then transitioned to midfield, played some halfback for the VFL team, obviously. Where do you sort of, or medium, short and long term, see him playing his best football?
Yeah, and that was actually set up prior to the season commencing. So because our line Vic Metro Club is Oakley, so Jagger and Finn did that the year prior, Sammy had a break in his fixture where Camberwell footy finished. Oakley had a few buys. We set that up, and I must admit, as it got closer, like, we sort of knew we were a chance to pick him and probably didn't want to show other clubs what he could do. But when he came out and played so well, we knew he'd probably, if we wanted to get him, we'd have to take him pretty high. He was awesome in those games.
He was.
Blair and I both went up to Gold Coast to watch that game and was so impressed. I think he sat on the bench and he came on. He had 9 touches in the first quarter. And it was more the way he went about it. Like, he was defending really strongly. He's taken the game forward. He fitted in really well with our backs. Him and Josh Gibkus connected really well. He wasn't afraid to sort of take him on and get involved in the physical side of the game. He had that passage where he spoiled on Sexton, then chased down Rogers and got involved. And then he backed it up at Sandy the next week. Against Sandy the next week out at Frankston. He was really aggressive in that game. He took the game forward. So, yeah, that filled us with confidence. And it was after that game that we're pretty confident he was our man. And we just assessed the rest of the boys, but Sammy's name sort of stayed up the top of the board. So, yeah, and again, he's a late developer. He's still developing physically. He's going to put on some size. So,
yeah,
he's a prospect that we're really excited about.
And it's his running capacity as well, like that blend of endurance and speed. I mean, from a combine testing perspective, those results haven't been seen for quite some time to finish as high as he did in both the key categories. I kind of picture his running ability like a bit of a Max Holmes type, just being able to run up and down all day, but he's got that hardened edge to him, like you said, which I think is really appealing.
Yeah, and that's probably the player that we liken him to, like Holmes, a little bit of Ed Richards. And to answer your question earlier, like, we probably see him starting at halfback, maybe wing, but in time there's no reason he can't like push into the midfield as well and give that real speed and bite through there. So I think his versatility is something that will hold him in good stead. It's really up to the coaches. Like, Jake Batchelor loved him at the VFL.
Yeah.
And he keen to get his hands on him in the backs, but whether he starts wing, whether he starts back, I'm happy regardless, as long as he's sort of learning and developing. And he'll take time. Like, he's not the final product of what he's going to be. We always talk about what they're going to be when they're 23, and I think, Holmes is one that he'd look up to try and play a little bit like.
Which would be a pretty good outcome. The second night of the draft was in a lot of ways as interesting as the first night, which was the unknown, I guess. Zane Piker come through at pick 31, and he was one that I guess a lot of Richmond supporters hadn't heard a whole lot of a lot about, but there was a genuine buzz in the selection room. Uze was pumped. You were pretty pumped up as well. Tell us a bit about Zane. How high did we have him on our board, and how long had you been tracking him for, and what's the big appeal for him?
Yeah, so Sam Cousins and I go out and meet with like Heath Uni, who works in the SA program, and Tony Bamford, and rate those guys really highly. They run a quality program. And I remember Heath sort of saying, look out for this kid. He's a late developer. He missed both the 16s and 17s program in SA, probably on the back of like developing a little bit later. And maybe his running capacity needed to improve. And to his credit, he got to work on that. And round one, he stood out. Like, we went over for the sample super round. And he played a game where he's just showcased. Like, he tested 2.85, which is elite speed, and he showcases that straight away. He's a little power packed little player. He's, and probably what we learnt more about him as the year went on, like his foot skills, his footy IQ, some of his kicking inside 50 if you watch the highlights package, but then his footy IQ, like his game within a game, ability to see the numbers, use his hands, see shape and just be relaxed on the ball, we thought was really quality. And he's got a real nose for goal. So, we think that'll hold him in good stead. He's not 18 until, later in December. He's still sort of learning and developing. He hasn't had access to all of the talent pathways like a lot of the other kids. I feel like once he improves his running capacity, he could really pop and be a player to watch for. So Yeah, he's clearly, as I've sort of just shown my excitement there, someone that we liked, but it's not going to happen straight away for Zane. Like, he's got some work to do. We're confident in his character that he'll go away and do that. But we think with, you know, a couple of pre-seasons under his belt, learning our system, he probably starts in the VFL and then works his way through. We think he's got some real upside and ability.
For someone who's not had access to all the other pathways, he is powerful through the legs. The photo the club posted up of him entering with Tom Lynch, I had to double take him. He's almost got bigger legs than Lynchy does. He's going to be an exciting prospect, I think.
Yeah, he's packed with power, and like you see that in his testing and in his game, and he can, you know, his vertical's really good as well. So
yeah,
just getting used to that AFL running. The boys did the Bronco test yesterday, and you know, he had a huge day. Like flew in, they went out for dinner as a group, they were in at the club early, they have training, Bronco test, on the bus out to the community camp. So yeah, he's going to find this little period challenging, but then, you know, he'll only improve and get better with that. So it's exciting to see what he can become.
And then the final player we brought in was Noah Roberts-Thompson, who we actually traded sort of into the draft for. We had pick 61, but we moved up the order slightly. Can you talk a little bit about the reasoning for moving up slightly? Was there obviously a bit of a worry he might have gone before our next pick? And what do you like about Noah?
Yeah, and so what we do there, like, we obviously speak to the players and the managers, and we ascertain who's interviewed them, who's been to their houses, who's, you know, more likely to pick them than not. And there was a few clubs coming up on the board that had put a fair bit of time into Noah. And he's managed by Brett Delidio, who's obviously a richer man. So speaking to Brett about, you know, who's likely to pick him and what that looks like, we just thought it was worth the risk. Like, we traded a future fifth, which I don't think's ever been done before. Blair worked a little bit of magic with the Gold Coast to get that
relationship
done.
With Gold Coast to get that done.
Yeah. And Craig has worked with us previously, and they weren't going to use that pick. So, you know, for them, they get another asset into next year, which might help them with some picks and some swaps and things like that. And for us, it meant we could just slide up and just took a bit of anxiety away. With Noah was at the top of our board, we could just skip 7 or 8 places in the draft and pick him. So, we were happy to do so. He's someone that we watch really closely this year.
Is he another one that's going to be more of a half forward / midfield hybrid type player?
Yeah, he played almost exclusively forward for midfield for Sturt this year. He was in a rotation where he's probably, you know, 65% mid and 35% forward. What we liked was his ability to power out. Like, he can get out the front of stoppage. If you look at all his edits, it's him like driving legs forward out of stoppage, whereas a lot of mids sort of drive backwards and lateral. He really takes the game forward, and his speed and power allows him to do so. I think he probably starts his career forward, but there's capacity to go in and play mid. Like, he's good with his hands. He's a competitor. He tackles. He's probably another that values defense as much as offense. He runs defensively and gets involved there. So it's really up to the coaches. He actually played as a small back in the 16s champs for SA as well. So I think with his speed and agility, there's capacity for him to do that as well. I've sort of handed him over to the coaches and said, you guys get to work. He's just a quality kid. He's highly intelligent. He's going to get a really good study score. He's an extremely hard worker. Like, some of the stories of him, he'd go and play in the Nationals and then he'd be studying on the flight home. He broke his finger in the middle of the Nationals but played through, which not many people would have known. So yeah, he's tough and he's hardworking and pretty high achieving sort of kid. So he's one that you feel really confident and safe bringing over, and then you just know he's going to get to work.
I think they're four really, really good selections, and I can't wait to see how they develop and grow. One of the questions that came through quite frequently in the lead-up to this was in regards to Louis Callaway. Obviously, was father-son tied to Richmond. Can you tell us a bit about how that all played out and, I suppose, where it all sits right now?
Yeah, we put a lot of time into Louis, starting sort of in his 16s. Like, he played Sturt and SA under 16s, and we were over there a lot. I went over to watch the 16s grand final at Adelaide Oval, which was a quality game with like Dyson Sharp and Matt Larray, Schubert, Louis, Noah Roberts-Thompson, Harley Barker. Like, there's a lot of players that ended up getting drafted, and then tracked Louis really closely last year. Obviously brought him over to the club both pre-seasons to train with the AFL, and had, you know, a fair bit of communication with him throughout the course of the year. He's a great kid. Like, he's he's a really smart kid. He's finished school. He's into his uni. He's working away from footy. His character references are really strong. So, you know, he's someone that we loved working with. I've been pretty vocal about, I don't love the media and the attention that goes on these father-son and NGA prospects. I think it puts unwanted pressure on the kids. And our role is really just to treat them like every other kid in the pool. But I know the media, like the father-son stories get clicks. I feel for a kid like Tom McGuan, who was talked up as a, you know, top 10, top 20 prospect early in the year. And then for him to miss, I think the kid would have been well informed, but his friends, the people around him, the kids they go to school with, it does put unwanted pressure on these kids. So we're really clear with Louis and the family throughout the year as to, you know, what it looked like for him and where he sat. And we're honest, you know, the day before the draft, the day leading into the rookie draft, had conversations with them. So ultimately we decided to go a different way. We had the SSB spots, but we've invited Tom Burton, who's, you know, was a big Metro captain, quality performer in the Coates League over 3 years, played AFL Academy, averaged 30 touches at Coates League. We've invited Marcus Krasnodamskis, who's a 202 centimetre ruck, a basketball background, new to footy and to do the SSP. So we didn't opt to go down that path with Louis, but we communicated strongly. He had a good understanding of where it sat. And it's not the end of the dream for Louis. He'll go back and probably play for Sturt next year and put everything he can into that and try and play some senior footy. So we'll keep watching and tracking him. But, yeah, I don't love the sort of media attention. And I guess, you know, the fans like the romance of it. They get attached when they see some media stories, and it just builds a little bit of pressure on these kids. So we just tried to be as honest as we could with him, and I think they're comfortable with where it sits, and hopefully the fans understand that we're just trying to do the best thing for Richmond. And unfortunately it didn't fall Louis's way, but he couldn't have done any more. He's a great kid, and you know, gave absolutely everything this year, and you know, we hope he continues on, and we'll keep tracking him through the sample and wherever he ends up.
Yeah, hopefully has a big year for Sturt. A couple more before we let you go. I suppose on the father-son front, kind of rolls into next year, 2026. We've got a couple there as well with Jack Lees and Archie Daffy and then Tanner Armstrong through the NGA. How are things tracking with them? And is there sort of player types that we're targeting next year? And how does the new system impact what we're going to be doing as well with the bidding?
Yeah, I guess to that point, like, we'll work with those kids really closely. Tanner's been in our program. He's worked closely with our NGA team. He's a quality kid. They've basically had him, you know, working with the club since he was 12 or 13. Same with Archie. Like, Archie's come through the programs with our father-son. He'll play at Geelong College and play with the Falcons this year. And Jack's come through. He played 16s SA and played some good sample footy this year. So we just don't want to put any unnecessary pressure on them. We'll just treat them like every other kid in the pool. We'll give them opportunities to train with our AFL and our VFL. Tanner's made the AFL Academy, which is great. But, like, to be really clear, it's, and we'll say this to the media and particularly the fans as well, they're just kids, and we just want them to go and enjoy their footy, whatever happens. If they end up being in the draft mix for us or someone else, that's great. But we just, being, you know, two of them are father sons and their dads were great players for us, we want to give them opportunities to improve and develop. And Tanner, you know, we love our NGA program pathway. We want to give them, give him the best opportunity, but there's no guarantees that, you know, they'll end up as Richmond players. We'd love that to be the case, but we just treat them like everyone else in the pool. We give them opportunities to improve, but it's going to become more difficult to match bids and points, and we'll just, when it comes to draft time, we'll just do what's best for Richmond and our developing list. And if that means it's those players, it's great. If it means it's other players, then it's the same. As long as we communicate really strongly with them, that's what it'll look like for us. So, but they're good kids. They're in and they love their time in our Father-Son Academy and our NGA program. So really looking forward to watching them and tracking them as the year goes on.
The other NGA I forgot to mention, don't be afraid to fire a shot Carlton's way, placing an early bid if need be on Cody Walker as well.
He's a gun. Like, we've watched him.
Good players.
We obviously, you know, tried to get him over to us. I think, you know, if he wasn't father-son, he would have loved nominating Richmond. But clearly his dad, you know, is a champion of their club and they've got really strong ties there. But Oh, he's a good player. Like he's proven at every level so far. He'll probably end up playing a bit of senior footy for Carlton in the VFL this year, I think. He's in the academy. So, yeah, excited to watch him play. Dougie Cochran's another one. Like he's obviously tied to Port now. But I was over watching Central's playing the seniors when he kicked his four goals under Bew. And it's like, this kid's pretty special. So, yeah, there's some quality kids in next year's draft, some of which are tied to clubs, but others in the open pool that we're excited to start watching as well.
And the final one, I just wanted to ask about the 2027 draft because that's, I mean, we've talked about compromised drafts this year and a little bit next year, but the Tassie draft for 2027 is a whole different ballgame. Does their concessions and what happens in their space, does that change the strategy for you at all significantly, or is it, do you just play on and stay the course as is and sort of trust the process?
Yeah, it was a fairly sizable factor in what we did last year. So obviously Shay wanted to get back to WA for family reasons. Bakes a little bit the same. Daniel was looking at opportunities, so it probably just solidified to us that might be the best thing for Richmond to try and get some picks into that 2024 draft. So that was sort of part of the reasoning. We knew that 27, we still think we'll get some good players in that draft, but it's going to be a little bit more difficult with Tassie having every second pick in the first round. Yeah. So it changed last year's plan a little bit. Obviously when North offered the pick to get another first rounder in early for this year. So little decisions like that. And then, yeah, we've clearly got to maximise our hand and pick really well next year, knowing that we might not get as much access to top-end talent the year after. So, yeah, you just got to play the hands that you dealt with. And then even that year, there's still going to be some quality players. You know, even if you finish eighth last on the ladder, you're still ending up with, you know, top 20 pick taking consideration as well. So we'll just do the work on that group and see what spits out and hopefully still pick someone pretty good.
Well, I feel like from a timing perspective, we're sort of loaded up in a really good time before that impacts us too much. So by the time Tassie really gets into the mix, I think we'll be a bit more established and well on our way to climbing back up the ladder with the young talent you've managed to acquire. But Ryan Geeshan, thank you so much, mate, for jumping on for a chat and answering some fan questions. Unbelievably appreciative of your time and the club allowing you to jump on and do it. It's been good fun, and I think everyone's going to learn a hell of a lot from this chat.
No worries at all. And as I said, we love the fans. Like, we've got the best fan group in the world. We love how passionate they are, not just about the club, but the draft and who we're looking at selecting. We know how much they embrace the players that we pick. So, yeah, happy to do so. And hopefully it answers some questions. And appreciate all the work you do and how much you love the club as well. So, more than happy to do so.
No worries. Thank you again, mate. Appreciate it.
No worries.